You're walking down a dark alley. You don't know what's in front of you. All you know is who's behind you. Who do you want behind you when you're walking down that dark alley?
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we welcome Coach Sheila Boykin, the assistant coach for USF women's basketball team. Sheila starred as a player at LSU, where she was a key contributor in the SEC before continuing her career overseas professionally. After her playing career had ended, she began her coaching journey at San Diego State University and later moved into an assistant coaching role at California State University, Northridge, where she developed talent and strengthened recruiting efforts. She also made a stop at Loyola University of Chicago and now where she stands at the University of South Florida. Coach Boykin has become an integral part of the successful AAC program, known for her ability to connect with players and bring out their best. Her experience as both a high-level player and coach has shaped her approach, emphasizing fundamentals, development, and building confidence in her players. Sheila has played a key role in fostering a winning culture while preparing athletes for success on and off the court. In this episode, we talk about challenges she has faced early in her coaching career, the recruiting trail as a D1 assistant coach in the AAC, and a unique way to grow as a coach after each practice. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Sheila Boykin. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome, coaches, and thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Here to chop it up, talk some hoops, your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Today, we are joined with none other, the assistant coach, USF, University of South Florida, Coach Sheila Boykin. Coach Boykin, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, hello. Thank you guys for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, welcome. Go Bulls.
So I have to admit, I was just going to say, I have to admit, low-key, underneath the screen, I held up a Bull. And I didn't even unconsciously just held up a Bull. So we're already prepared. We already got it going through the bloodstream.
I'm glad to be able to start.
No, but a couple of things. First off, you've had a heck of a playing career, playing at LSU, going on, playing professionally all around the world in a variety of places. And then obviously having a great coaching career so far. But the one thing that we always like to do is just really give you a full synopsis and give everybody an idea of where you've been throughout those stops in a quick nutshell. But the number one thing I want to ask, and I felt like we got away from this to start out. It was something I always like to ask, was like when you were getting recruited, right? You were a very active player. I know you had a ton of interest from a bunch of different schools, I'm sure. You were a high school recruit, one of the nation's top recruits, so obviously you were. But what were some things that like coaches had did throughout the process? You don't have to necessarily specify who unless you wish, but just a recruiting process, because nowadays recruiting is different. Completely different, but what were some things and some tactics that maybe some coaches did throughout that process that really stood out to you?
I would say I agree with you. The scope of recruiting has changed so much. I graduated high school back in 2011 from Long Beach Poly. They called it the home of the scholars of champions. So we had players who went on to play in the MLB, the NBA, the WNBA, so many great accolades from a sports aspect from that school. And so yes, I was highly recruited. And it was hands down one of the most overwhelming experiences of my life. I remember being in class, and this was my last period class. I would take a 3D art class, and I remember people would be calling me, and I'm like, yo, I'm paper macheing right now. Can I just focus on that? But I would say one thing a lot of coaches did is they were on it, and that was pre-Instagram. I think MySpace was a thing at the time. It was MySpace and Facebook. But this is pre-IG, pre-X now, used to be Twitter. And there were different rules along that. But I think coaches were very intentional with building that relationship with me as well as with my family. I remember being on the call with Dawn Staley and then having to pass the phone over to my mom. And then debriefing after, okay, Coach Staley, she's serious. And they started when we were young too, because then they were on it. And I remember even being on the call with late Kevin Morrison. He was at Cal at the time. And him and I talked quite a bit, and we built a really solid relationship. And I was fortunate to also share that relationship at San Diego State as a GA. But I remember being on calls with him when I was a crew, and I was like, can I just ask someone, can I just commit now, please? Can I just commit? Because they were good, and you had to so many other things outside of money. And those decisions that we made at the time were based off of, okay, this is going to be my home for 4 years. This is where I'm going to be for the next 4 years. Even if I'm thinking about transferring, I really have to think about this, because then I'd have to sit out a year. So the scope of recruiting in regards to the transfer portal, NIL and shared revenue, what we had to think about back then was very different than what I think recruits have to think about now. And back then it was really relationship driven.
Yeah, for sure. And that now that stuff is the second conversation and the third conversation, because obviously, yeah, we all know what the first conversation is anymore. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Was that something that you and your family, like, everybody has their three or four cornerstones in recruiting? This is what we're looking for. And obviously, you were going to have a chance to play no matter where you went. So it wasn't like, I'm going to play more here versus there. You're going to play no matter where you went. So then after that, what were the things relationally, or were there other things that back then were important? What were those two or three other things outside of playing for you?
Yeah, it was definitely relationships with coaches. You know, I think my backstory with having committed to LA to play for Nikki Fargas, and when that whole staff left to LSU, I basically asked Nikki, can you put me in your suitcase and take me with you to Baton Rouge? That, I think, was a testament to the relationship that I had with her and the staff. And at the time, you had Tasha Butts, who was at Georgetown. You have Stacey Terry Hudson now, who gave me my first opportunity as a GA at San Diego State. And Tony Perotti, who is like a second father to me. I talk to that man, I can call him up whenever. So those relationships really did matter to me, because I really had to think about this. And I'm not going to lie, when I was deciding between, after Nikki had left and when Corey had taken over at UCLA, Corey had heavily recruited me. And I remember being in her office, being on the phone with her, and this stuck with me still to this day. And I still try to sell this to recruits as best as I can. And I don't know if I can do it like her, but she said, where do you want to be on your bad days? Who do you want to be with on your bad days? Those things matter, because facilities are nice. Money is nice. But when you're having that tough time as a freshman, I call it the freshman blues, who's going to help you out of that rut? When you have a bad game, are those coaches still going to be in your corner? Are those coaches transactional? And they base that relationship off of what you're doing for them on the court. So that's one thing that I think I definitely have taken with me as a player, as continuing my career at LSU, and even now as a coach. And that's how I coach. That's my philosophy is, are you going to be in these kids' corners when they're having a bad day? But also, academics was important to me. Back then, it was like, I'm going to go play. So I wouldn't say I was the best student. Looking back at it, I could have been a lot better. But academics was very important. And also, I would say the investment in women's basketball as well. And that was another thing that was difficult in making that decision between deciding to stay at UCLA to LSU. And at the time, and granted, Corey has built that place up to a national powerhouse, competing in the Final Four, hands down. Today, I would love to go play for her. But at the time, with SEC women's basketball being, if not the best conference in the country, it's like, why not? Why not go somewhere where you got fans waiting outside the plane for you? When you got fans coming to practice, you got people reaching out to you. I remember I had gotten sick my sophomore year with Guillain-Barré syndrome, and that support that I received from the fan base was tremendous. And I will say this, like, SEC loves women's basketball. So,
yeah, for sure.
No, that's great, especially one, being able to have those experiences, meet those coaches, and just go through the processes regardless. You said, excuse me, you said the freshman blues, and that immediately, it's just something with me, because I remember my freshman year at one point, I ran to the bathroom after one practice. My coach was a very old school coach. Okay. Yes. So he was very in your face, spit spewing. And I had that in high school too at one point. So it's not like I wasn't used to it, but it was just a freshman blues. You're away from everything. It's a completely new environment. You're like, all right, can you take this on? I remember calling my dad. I don't know if I can do this. He goes, oh, you'll be fine. And then the next day I was right back at it. So it was like, but I understand completely what you are saying. Yes.
But isn't it crazy how like it was, oh, you'll be fine. Like even when I would call my mom, and because I was my freshman year at LSU, I didn't play a whole lot. And that's another thing that's changed is my freshman year, there were five other players that were in my position ahead of me. And somehow I worked my way towards the end of the season into a rotation. But for the most part, I didn't play a whole lot. And so I had to be the best teammate on the bench. I couldn't be a jerk because coach was really big on that, not being a jerk. But also, if I thought about transferring, I really had to think about that because I was like, okay, I didn't play this past year. Next year, it's looking a lot more on the upside. Do I transfer because I'm going to have to sit out a year? I'm going to have to sit out a year. Where now it's like, hey, if I want to transfer, I could play right away. So I think the thought process is a lot different. I think I don't want to say players don't want to deal with things this year, because I think the pressures that they deal with is very different than what we had to deal with at the time, especially with social media and NIL and everything like that. But I think it did teach us, and I guess Doug, you could say the same thing. It taught us how to go through some stuff and even things that mm-hmm. we enjoy in the moment, but to just overcome it.
Yeah, you know what? I love what you said. It sounds like the whole staff recruited you, and we're in such a crazy, and coaches, we can be like this at times on staffs, like somebody's recruiting a high level player, and then it's like, they're hovering over the kid like a guy at a prison lunch hovering over his meal. And so they don't want anybody to touch him. Nobody else call him. This is my guy or my girl. And that drives me crazy because you just name the entire staff. And what happens with the my guy, my girl stuff is if that kid comes, they're going to probably feel most likely to move on if things aren't going great, because what if that coach leaves? That coach that was the territorial one, what if that coach leaves? Now you don't have a relationship with anybody else.
Agreed. So, I love that you said that. I really did.
You're nervous to walk into anybody else's office because you never got to know them in the process.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think it's something that's more common now in coaching. I think a part of it's because of like just how fast and quick everything's going. There's a place for everybody in club ball, especially American AU basketball on both girls and boys sides. I remember playing for West Coast Premier, now their Why Not Premier, in EYBL circuit. And I remember the tournament we used to have with Nike Nationals. That was at Augusta, South Carolina. It was at mm-hmm. a rec center. There were four courts.
Riverview Athletic Center.
You had the track, the walking track up top, where if it was a good game, all the coaches would go up there and peek down and stuff. And then they'd give us the awesome cold sandwiches right after the games. But that's how it was. Whereas now there's so many recruiting that, again, it just changed. But I'm a strong believer as a coach where it takes a village. There's never one coach who does one thing solely by themselves. And there's times where it's funny, Jose would say, great job on that scout or great job on that kid. And I'm just like, hey, it takes a village. Someone, hey, you must have done something. No, it's we. They're our kids. Because, and my thing with those coaches, and I'll just say this right now, to those coaches who are territorial and who want to be all like my kid, they better be your kid and you better take responsibility and accountability if they're not doing their part too. That's my thing. Because if you're going to be like that, take own everything, the good, the bad, the ugly, take ownership, not just when they're doing well.
Somebody can drop your name on social media that you recruited this kid. That's another part of it too, that we get caught up in. So you're right. You always want kids when they commit to say, I felt like that staff wanted me. I felt like the coaches wanted me, as opposed to, yeah, Coach Doug was my guy in this process.
Yeah.
When a kid says, man, it just felt like the whole staff wanted me.
Yeah. And it's okay to be like a point person on a kid. Like,
absolutely.
You know, it's always
gotta have that.
I agree. I think it has to be a staff all on the same page, not in agreement. It's obviously the head coach's decision. Once we know we want that kid, like we're all going after that kid relentlessly, because it's not us staff against each other. It's us as a staff against other schools and competition.
There you go. There mm-hmm. you go. 100%.
And just to throw in the wrench again, today's era of recruiting is completely different. It's throwing me for a loop, and I'm still a young coach in it too. You're used to, before I used to be hammered, make sure to get this kid to campus. Let's tour him around. Let's tour him around. Now it's who cares if we get him to campus? Because half the time they don't even care. They just want to show up and play ball. And that's a complete adjustment to me now. I'm thinking, I'm like, I'm over here trying to drill people to get him to campus. And no, we don't really need to. Like half of our commits haven't even seen the place.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Like it's so different now. But you know what? I think we either adapt or we get left behind. And I think we're adapting pretty well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So throughout your coaching career, you're still a young coach in the industry, but you have had some great stops. San Diego State, Cal State, Loyola University, Chicago, and then obviously USF now. But with the stops that you have had and being a young coach in the industry, have there been any challenges you have faced being able to grow in the industry and just moving from one spot to the next? Because we always talk about on here, everybody wants to share the glory, the you being at San Diego State and going to Cal State, but not everybody notices like the hard work and that, like the little things that go behind the scenes that you don't notice.
Yeah, I think I was very fortunate to start my career off at San Diego State with Stacey Terry Hudson, her being a former coach of mine when I was at LSU. And she just had a great season at San Diego State with the Aztecs. So extremely proud of her. But being a GA there, that was the first time they had a GA. And so I was fortunate enough. There's another GA on the men's side, Kevin Buddy. He's now at Arkansas on the men's staff there. But one thing I really enjoyed while being there was that Stacey was a very offensively minded coach. And so me coming from a background of like defense and rebounding, that SEC mindset, it was great to learn more on the offensive end of things. But I would say one of the hardships I experienced was COVID, because COVID hit my second year when I was a GA. And so my first Final Four after my first year at San Diego State was here in Tampa. So it's so ironic I'm here. But my second year, there was no Final Four. So I had to figure out how to network and how to build those relationships to possibly find another job. And so in between Cal State Northridge and San Diego State, I was actually a head coach at Marlboro, which is a private school in LA. I was there for maybe 3 months, and then I lucked out and got to Cal State Northridge. But I would say one thing that a lot of coaches, a lot of young coaches that they deal with is they don't know what they don't know. And it's hard to know sometimes where you have to be better when sometimes you step into spaces and you don't know what to do. So I think that's one thing that I struggled with. Okay, like, I don't know what I don't know. I want to learn so much. I want to say so much, but I don't want to sound stupid. But also, I don't know what I don't know. And so what I did was I sought out mentorship. And I'm fortunate for John Silver, who was also, he also was at UCLA when I was being recruited. And also he was at LSU when I was a player as a Dobo. And he was at San Diego State as a Dobo when I was a GA. So that was a relationship I cultivated over the years. And he taught me a lot during my time there, as well as Stacey. But also, I was that type of person that when the men's team was practicing, I was in there, because our men's team was very successful. My second year there, I can't remember my second or third, or after I graduated, they almost went undefeated. Actually, no, it was COVID, because they didn't get to go to the tournament that year. That was a winning program there. And so I would sneak into their practices. And I would have my notebook, it's still there, but I would take notes, and Steve Fisher would stop by, and him and I would talk a little bit. And so I think one thing, a mistake that a lot of young coaches make is that we don't enter into spaces open to learning. I think we're so caught up in trying to prove ourselves so much that we don't sit back and observe and just take things in. But I think that's part of the not knowing what we don't know aspect of things. But another challenge for me was just the change in athletics, the change of the players themselves. This generation of athletes, they need a lot more love than they did. I'm not saying that we didn't need love, but you know, that love was different. We looked at love from our coaches as getting in our face, holding us accountable, the 6 a.m. conditioning if you miss class. That was love. That was okay, who cares about me because they're holding me accountable. Where now these kids, they need more check-ins. They need more, how are you? Hey, good luck on that test. They need the after a bad game, hey, you're okay, you got this. The film sessions, it's always a gauge. And I could tell by when they walk into my office, okay, you need a hug, come here. But that was the challenge that I had, because we're so caught up in, back in my day, it was like this and it was like that. These kids don't care. It's so different. And they love Mal more now than ever. But I would say those are some of the challenges, not knowing what I didn't know and also trying to seek out mentorship from outside as well, and then having to adjust to today's athlete.
Yeah, no, those are great. Especially the kids, because they're just such a different level of scrutiny. The moment they don't have to leave their apartment or their dorm to be scrutinized.
No.
Like, just pick your phone up. And again, that's the art to that in itself, of does that thing own you or do you own it?
Right.
Because there's no real in between there. You've got to make a decision with that thing. And if it owns you, then there's a lot that comes with that, because now you're going to expose yourself to maybe more scrutiny than, and most of it probably not fair, but it's just there. And your scrutiny was from your peers as a player, because
we just talked smack to each other.
You didn't have to worry about your phone. It wasn't, an iPhone was only out in 07 or whatever it was, or 08. So, you know, you didn't even have to worry about some of that stuff. But you're right, now every day, like, kids, you have to take their temperature every single day. You literally do.
Yeah, and it helps knowing how to coach them, how to approach them, all those different things, because we're coaching more. It's less physical. It's more between the ears. I think that's what we're doing. Sorry, Doug, if I cut you off.
No, I was going to completely agree with all of it, because there's a lot more people and a lot more voices in people's ears now, and it might not even be somebody they know's voice. It could just be some third party randomly posting stuff like on social media. Completely. I saw something recently that said that your social media feed is ultimately what goes on your brain on a day-to-day basis. Because if you're watching videos about basketball, your feed is most likely going to continue to grow about basketball. If you're watching something about, I don't know, Animal Planet or something random, like, that's what's going to be popping up. So it's like, whatever is what ultimately goes through your brain and wires your brain. Ever since I heard that, I'm watching these videos and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to put this phone down for the day.
Don't do it to yourself.
Yeah.
It's too early in the morning for this one. But I want to ask, too, you said something about taking notes. Now, I apologize. Did you say you were taking notes in practice? You said the notes are behind you. Are those notes that you take from prior practices or from games? Or?
So with the notes, when I was a GA, so I was always – my notes were always after practice, post practice, because I had to watch certain things in practice as well. Stacy did, one thing I really am grateful for that Stacy did is that she allowed me to have a voice. She also encouraged me to talk to the players and stuff like that, because she's like, hey, like, you have been in their shoes. What's going on? You can help them in ways that some of us can't. But also for when I would go to the men's practices, I was just literally sitting on the side and I would just be taking notes while they're practicing. Because I'm a strong believer in, you can learn from anybody.
You can
learn from anyone. And at each stop I've had, there's things that I liked, there's things that I didn't like. And it's weird. The other day I wrote a list of all those stops I had. Okay, this is what I liked from this stop. This is what I didn't like, or this is what I would do a little bit differently. Creating my own little philosophy for when I'm in that chair today. But at the same time, have mentors on the women's side. I have mentors on the men's side. There's people who've coached in the NBA who I've talked to, WNBA. I love to learn from everybody. Even if there's like an old head at the park, can you teach me your ways of longevity? Like, but yeah, I have my notes and stuff. And so some of them I would quote Dave Velasquez. He's an assistant at San Diego State men's and stuff. But more so when I was on for the women's for San Diego State as a GA, a lot of it was more so like practice stuff, like things we needed to improve and things like that.
That was one thing I recently picked up. And as soon as you said it, I was like, that caught my attention, because I am the king. And I'll guess I'll self-appoint myself here. The king of going into practice, seeing something, and thinking, all right, we got to make sure we change this or adjust this later on. Give me another 10 minutes in a different drill. And I'm like, I have no idea what I was supposed to remember. So I started bringing around, like, on the practice plan, I always have a pen and I always try to write something down. And that's one thing that a prior coach has taught me. And it's definitely helped me out a ton, is just write that stuff down, because then all those thoughts end up coming a practice plan for tomorrow or whatever it might be. And it's like, a lot of times you got to write stuff down. At least for me, I do not have the memory bank to be able to remember a lot of that.
Oh, because so many things go on. It's so crazy. Because like after practice, like kids could come to you, Coach, I need help with housing. I need help with this. Or, hey, I ate tilapia last night. Okay, that's gross. Thanks for telling me. But there's always so many different things that hit us after practice that I think it's a good thing to write in the moment. But even when Jose's doing workouts downstairs with our kids, I still bring, he gave me these field notes. It's so funny. They're so cute too. It's this little booklet field notes. And so like I bring that down, that even though I'm going on my third year here, I think I've created a good grasp for myself of what we do here. But you never know. So there's times where he's doing workouts and he says something and I write it down, because you just never know when you're going to need it.
Yeah. The thing we have to, I was literally just talking to somebody about this yesterday. As coaches, we have to constantly be on the hunt and on the lookout to find different ways to say the same things.
Yes.
Like, and then you, over your course of your a year and then 2 years, 5 years, you're compiling this verbal library of saying the same things. So drive the ball, play off 2 feet. Great. That's one way to say it. Drive the ball, use your 2.5. All right.
Right.
So you got 2.5 to make you, that's one, another way to say it. Drive the ball, use your brakes. Like we said, everything meant the same thing, but it's just, it's, we're constantly on the hunt of trying to say things in different ways. So that's why note-taking is so important, because you're taking a snippet of something that resonates you with you. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to help you be a better teacher, because you're going to now, you may not say it exactly the same way, but you may repeat that phrase in your words, or you may say it exactly the same way. That's fine too. But the bottom line is we have to just be constantly on the hunt to sharpen our levels of communication, because if it's the same way every single time, it's okay, coach, I got it. Whereas, so you're, in a sense, is it mental trickery? Yeah, maybe. But 2.5, hitting the brakes and playing off two is all the same thing.
Yeah.
But you could say the same thing in 3 days of a workout week, say one thing on Monday, another thing on Wednesday, another thing on Friday. They all the same thing.
Right.
But it's, that's something I think that's a challenge for us to, as coaches, we have to continue to grow in that area, because that keeps our ability to teach better. And the better teachers we become, then the players are going to benefit.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you said that, the continuous growth aspect, because, you know, I think right now in an era in coaching where I think people could be very comfortable and think that they may not have to do things differently or learn anything more. I do agree with you with the continuous growth, constantly seeking growth opportunities. And that's why I'm always very grateful for Patty Medina at American University, because she has introduced me to things that I never would even thought of being a part of. And someone who is aspiring to be a head coach someday, she's encouraged me to be in spaces with those making the decisions and hiring. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's growth.
Absolutely. I'm all about it. Yeah, no, we can tell. It's jumping off the screen on this pod.
Oh,
sure.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Coach, one thing I want to make sure to bring out too, and I know when we were talking these last couple of weeks, you have been all over the place, right? One day I'm texting you, and I know some of these were more personal just to get out mm-hmm. while you have some time, but some of them were also on the recruiting trail. Al, one day she's in Colorado. The next day she goes, yeah, I'm just landing in D.C. coming back from Istanbul. I'm like, oh, geez, you have been all over the place. So I guess my question is, one, you could definitely see from that experience from being in a Division I level, South Florida, you obviously have to, and as well as many other Division I schools, you have to get all over the place, not even just in the country, to be able to recruit. Can you just talk about like the recruiting trail? You don't have to necessarily go too much in depth in it, but how much during the off season, if you want to call it an off season, because I understand that there really right. is no off, but how much of the quote unquote off season would you say you're on the road traveling for recruiting as an assistant at this level?
I would say off season, the recruiting calendar changes quite a bit. So we did have a eval period in April, but actually I'm going to take it back. Portal combat. Okay. Portal combat is a real thing and it's changed a lot. And I think it's a big reason why you see a lot of drop off with younger coaches profession right now, because season ends and there is no, okay, I'm going to take 2 weeks off and go to Mexico, or I'm going to go here, because the players get 2 weeks off, but we're in the portal. And even in the conference tournament this year, we're advancing each round in our conference tournament and we're still looking at the portal and we're still recruiting, and because it's still a thing. So that's one thing that has definitely occupied a lot of our time and a lot of our minds, especially once season is over and we have conversations or players put themselves in the portal. But the eval periods with AU, there's multiple prior to July. You have one in April. You have one in May, and then you have the Scholastic event in June, and then July. Now we have two. Last summer it was three because we had the College Basketball Academy. So with those days that we're allowed to go out recruiting, we go out, and we were there for the whole entire time when we can't go out recruiting and where recruits can see us. But in regards to like the portal, again, that's a thing that's just an entity in itself where you're talking to a kid on a Tuesday and then you bring them in on a Friday. That's just how, or a Thursday, that's just how fast everything moves. But I think recruiting, it's a constant thing. And I think that's why a lot of coaches take their vacations during the recruiting shutdown, because that's just a week where you're not allowed to talk to recruits. And you just can't see them, you can't talk to them, you can't talk to anybody involved. So that's why a lot of coaches take their vacations during that time. But so much time goes into it. It's constant. You have to reach out to kids, whether it's via text, phone call, Zoom. Mail outs is something that we take very seriously here as well. So that constant touch base with recruits, it's very frequent, more than people think. And it has to be, because they need that as well. Not everyone's looking for money, but some kids are also looking for, where am I going to play as well?
Yeah.
So no,
you're right. You're either recruiting other kids or you're recruiting your own team during the season.
Yeah.
That's a constant thing. So even obviously recruiting other prospects throughout the season too, when you can go do stuff, hit tournaments and things like that. But yeah, those constant temperature taking, that's a form of still recruiting your own players.
Yeah,
you know, and that's usually the first step. And once the portal opens, that's usually the first kids you start recruiting, is like, oh, who's coming back?
Right.
Who's staying? Because obviously then that affects how many chairs you're going to have open when the music starts.
Right.
So
that was a good point.
And it's tough, especially like some people, maybe not necessarily, I guess at all levels, they on the fence of what they want to do. Do I want to go to that next? I'm shopping for that next place. And they enter the portal and they're sitting there and they're waiting. And it's now you're putting the coaches in a hard position, because what do? We want to backlog this position, but you obviously want to keep this person around. And it's just,
right. Yeah,
it's a messy world now. But obviously there's a lot of things you got to learn through it. And once you do, there's some great success that comes out of it, which your program has had. And I know you mentioned him a couple of times, but Coach Jose Fernandez, the head coach, just talk about, since joining the staff, I know you've been there, but talk about just like some of the pros and some things that you have necessarily learned through Coach Fernandez and the program so far.
Yeah.
And what's his superpower?
His superpower. Oh my God. There's so many. You ready? Take notes. I would say Jose has this place running like a well-oiled machine. He's been very successful. He just finished his 25th season here at South Florida. A lot of people don't know this, but my senior year at LSU did end here at South Florida. In the first round of the tournament, they knocked us out. They had a great team. They had Courtney Williams. They had so many great players on there that went on to play professionally. And I think it starts off with the standards that he sets. It starts off with the standards that he sets. And one thing about Jose is he's very direct and he's very honest. You never have to wonder where you sit with him. He's honest with everybody. He's honest with us as a staff. He's honest with the players. One thing I do like that he does is he meets with our kids once every 2 weeks. And those are just check-ins. Sometimes it's about basketball, sometimes it's not. But if you want to know why if you're not playing or where you have to improve, he's going to tell you like it is. And he's just going to be very honest with you. And I think that's a great quality, because I think in a time where I feel people can be very fake, especially coaches, and they could say one thing but do another, Jose is someone that when he says something, he means it and he follows up with it with action. But also, great X's and O's mind. We have a lot of plays. I was sitting next to Chris Daly from UConn at an event in Columbia. And she's, yeah, we have you guys coming this. They're like, we're playing you guys this year. And I was like, yeah, we're excited. And I knew it's UConn. But she was like, yeah, I'm going to make sure I don't have that scout. Because we just do so much. And the thing is, people have asked me, like, how do you scout South Florida? How do you scout South Florida? And I'll just say, your best bet is just to try and conceptually defend. Just think concept. Because we have so many things that we do. We have a very European-style offense. And we play fast, but it's who's he going to run a set for this time? You don't know. Like, you just don't know. So I would say that's one thing I really enjoyed since being here, is just expanding the playbook and expanding my knowledge on X's and O's, why we do certain things, why we do certain actions. I've learned so much from him, and he's been a great advocate with the, I call him El Presidente for the WBC. I call him that, but no, like he has his hands in so many different things that it's admirable how he can be the president for the WBCA as well as coach for Team USA and win a gold medal and run an NCAA tournament program successfully. I think his secret sauce is he's also hired a hell of a staff, because I think our associate head coach, Michelle Woods-Baxter, who's been here with him, I think for her, this is year 18 now. So she's been his right-hand woman, and she's helped him recruit internationally. She's helped him recruit their own players continuously, very relationship-driven. So she's like the head honcho when he's out with Team USA or when he's doing things with the WBCA. So I think it starts with hiring as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, delegation is, and you'll, and I say when, because you said it earlier, when you move over into that chair, we're not saying if, we don't say if on this program, we say Later. When. But being able to delegate is one of the fastest things that you'll eventually learn. Clearly he's mastered it.
Yeah.
He's had 25 repetitions on how to delegate. Clearly he's mastered it, but that'll be one of the things as you step in that big becoming a head coach is just the people that you can trust, people that you want to be around every day.
Yes.
You know, that's such a huge part of hiring is, do I just want to be around this person? Because it's too long. This is a year-round deal. This is not just like the season and then NBA guys go their separate ways after 8 months.
Right.
But you're still with each other. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one. Just who do I want to be around this person? Is this person funny? What kind of energy does this person will they get your jokes? You want somebody that's going to get you jokes?
Yeah, you know,
somebody that when they walk into
the room, if it's a fake laugh, right? Just give me a fake laugh.
What kind of energy is this person bringing into the room? So you're getting like a master class on a lot of stuff that you probably won't even realize it until your time comes. You're absorbing it now, but you're going to apply it later.
Yes. Yes. No, he's been great. And I think one thing I value about Jose is him and I have a really good relationship and we're very honest with each other. I can be honest with him. He could be honest with me. And it's nothing personal, because that's a big part for me too, is like loyalty. I'm very big on loyalty, and where I'm from, I grew up in Lincoln Heights in LA. And it's loyalty is such a really big thing. I don't like looking over my shoulder and not knowing who's in my corner. Or my mom, because both of my parents did coach JUCO basketball. So I was that big headed kid in the corner bouncing the ball. But my mom had this analogy of, she would tell her players this. She goes, you're walking down a dark alley. You don't know what's in front of you. All you know is who's behind you. Who do you want behind you when you're walking down that dark alley? And so, you know, Jose Fernandez is definitely one of those
people. Wow. I love that. Yeah.
That's a good reference.
Yeah. That's golden right there. Golden nugget.
No, I have to say, yeah, especially just off of that, it's great to be able to learn from somebody who's been around the game so much. This past year, you guys were 23-11. Right. So it's like, you obviously, what you're doing is successful. It's working. It's steering you in the right direction. And again, he's been doing it for 25 years. So I don't think it takes me to sit here and say that. I think everybody knows that. But it definitely speaks. And the point, too, that I take away from all of this is the notes that you take. Right. Because again, you're going to probably learn so much. I've been with some great coaches throughout my young career, too. And sometimes you look back and you're like, I forget how he did this. And that's why I have a whole, I'm happy you talked about the notes, because I have a whole dialogue of a bunch of practice plans and a bunch of things I started writing down. And now you can resort back to those, because again, forget everything that you've already went over and saw. Now you can go back to it and look at the notes, look at everything you have. And we had a high school coach on here recently talk about, he takes notes after every single practice. And he said he has one from literally, he's been doing it for what, almost 30? Yeah, was it 30? It was 30
Flannery?
Years.
Yeah, Flannery. 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. 30 years. And it's like, he takes notes after everything, and it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. But, hey, that's what helps you improve and succeed later on in life. Everybody has a different way of doing it.
Agreed. I love it.
Yeah, no. You have a head coach that, you know, as experienced as he is, he still works and learns. I'm sure he's got his ways and people that he studies and learns from. And I know he has his nose in stuff as well, deep in FIBA. Yeah. He's as experienced as he is, he still approaches things like a rookie. And yeah, that's the healthiest balance you can ask for, right? You have all this experience, but there's still a rookie humility in terms of trying to learn and grow and accept when you're wrong. Yeah, my fault, Steph.
I agree.
You're very, very fortunate to be with. He is a pillar in your game for sure.
Thank you.
No doubt.
Coach, obviously, we are looking forward to seeing where you are able to go and succeed. Of course, we always say be where your feet are, so I don't want to get too ahead of myself. But at the same point, definitely looking forward to seeing where you grow in the industry. But what we want to do first is, again, take you back full circle and ultimately back to that SDS University, San Diego State, right? One of the first positions following that playing career. If you had any advice for your younger self, and I always hate saying that because I feel like people are always going to get mad at me. If you have any advice for yourself starting out in the profession, okay, knowing what you know now, what advice could you share with yourself?
Oh, man, these are always great questions to ask because, yeah, that was some years ago, 5 or 6, I think. I'm not that old. But I would tell myself to not stress the little things. I would tell myself not to stress the little things and to just be a sponge and to continue to just observe and to continue that growth mindset. Because again, young coaches, I seek mentorship from a lot of the OGs, the people who've been doing this for 20 plus years. Cause I'm like, you've created longevity for yourself. You've adapted to all these changes to players and NIL, shared revenue, recruiting, everything. And so I think one of the biggest, I don't want to say complaints, but the biggest feedback that I get of where us as young coaches could be better is that we need to step into spaces more as learners. And not saying that we can't apply what we know, because obviously playing in the SEC, playing professionally, I do bring value. But
absolutely,
you got to learn the coach's aspect of things. That kid's not just lazy. Maybe that kid is having a hard time because that kid's uncle just died or because they're really academically driven and they just bombed that test. There's so much learning that goes into it, especially those first couple of years, that I think it's okay to step into spaces and say, you know what? I don't know. I had just gotten back from Istanbul and they have a great system here of international recruiting. I've been fortunate where Jose's allowed me to go to a couple places to adapt, to step into international recruiting a little bit. And there was a country I didn't know how to pronounce. I didn't. Still to this very second, I don't know how to pronounce it. But I was like, okay, yeah, I don't know how to say that word. And do you have any idea how much like humility to just step into a space and say, I don't know. But I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to understand. So I think I would just tell myself to continue and to do that a little bit more, because sometimes we're just a little bit afraid for some reason. Like we're afraid, but also we're very bold when we first step in. I don't know. It's just either we're one or the other. But to just, and also to seek out constant mentorship and to also trust in my abilities. To trust in my abilities and trust everything that I've learned and to trust in myself that I'm going to do what I have to do to continue to learn.
Yeah, for sure. Because the competitor in you, that same competitor that threw bows went around when you were playing, you know, that same
thing. Talking about.
Yeah. You're like Reggie Miller with the leg kick. Yeah, I don't know what happened. But that same competitor kicks in, mm-hmm. Coach, right? So that same competitor that wanted to develop as a player and wanted to fill your chuck holes as a player, then you realize you have these chuck holes as a coach. And that same competitor wants to fill those chuck holes that same way and that same attitude. So that's what's so good about what you're saying, is because the game is the game. Like basketball, like that's not the issue of figuring out the basketball part. It's the teaching and the communication. And again, the temperature taking and 1 through 14, where's each person's button and all those kinds of things. Now, before Dougie lands a plane, this has been so good for us. Love your energy, number one. Love your energy. Yeah, that's all right. Whatever it takes. The genuine or artificial, sometimes it's both together, but that's all right. But now, you like this, we just, Dougie has said it, you just on the ground floor, just getting started. Such a bright future, but this has been really good for us. So we just thank you for taking some time to hang with us.
No, thank you. You guys have been awesome. And I love that it felt very comfortable. I felt good.
Yeah, we told you. This is more of a basketball chop-up as opposed to, like I said, you'll have your share of pressers in the future, but this shouldn't feel like one right now. We definitely didn't want to make this feel like. Next question. We didn't want to do that to you. So this should be fun. And it was, and it will impact some listeners for sure, because you're going to say one thing to that one person. You don't know who it is. You don't know where it'll land. But there'll be things you say today that will hit that one person in that one way on that one certain day when they needed to hear it. And so the nice part is if that's going to happen, you'd like to know who and when. but no, this was great. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for being on here. Like I said, I know you've been busy even traveling around. It's good to be able to chat, get a conversation in, and obviously thank Patty for connecting us. And of course, like I said, look forward to seeing where you grow in the industry. And for everybody out there, we want to thank you again for listening to us in another episode, the RCP. I'm starting to start with the acronyms now, right? You like that. Rising Coaches Podcast, everybody. Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Keep working, coaches, and keep rising. We'll see you all soon. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. Thank you.